I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
KSL at Night was recorded and produced this afternoon. KSL at Night. Some of Utah's top political specialists join a roundtable on the day's biggest stories. KSL is at 102.7 FM and on every smart speaker when you say play KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to KSL at Night. This is Scott Simpson. I'm here with Kate Klunt. You're listening to KSL at Night. This is a cool show. I'm just going to say it out loud. Weeknights 7 to 9. It's a great show. We talk about, you know, some lighthearted stuff, but we also get into some of the heavy stuff. And this is an interesting topic. Representative John Curtis has just introduced a bipartisan bill in Congress to create a national voluntary do not sell firearms list. And this is not a new idea. In fact, we have a similar piece of legislation here in Utah. But the concept is that individuals can restrict themselves from buying or possessing a firearm in order to kind of attempt to reduce the use of guns and suicides. I think it's interesting, Kate. I'm fascinated at the notion. I think it's we need to be doing everything that we can to try to intervene in those that, you know, are at a point of crisis to make a decision like that. I do think we need some expertise, though, as we talk through this. We have with us on the line Evan Goldstein, who's assistant professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences at the University of Utah School of Medicine. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Good evening, Kate and Scott. Thank you for having me on. This is certainly an important public health issue, and more importantly, it's an emotional issue that is affecting a lot of families and communities across our state and across the United States.
For sure, and thank you for the good work that you're doing. I know it's got a take some energy to focus on issues like these. Let me ask, you know, Utah, we talked about Utah passing a bill. I think it was introduced by Representative Steve Ellison, passed in 2021 and became officially implemented in May of that year. Do we have a track record on this? Can we point to, you know, any positive news around the implementation, or is it just too soon?
Well, it is soon. You know, thankfully, though, there is some good science out there suggesting that public policy, which I define as the laws, rules, and actions of government, has the opportunity to help address firearm suicide and save lives in Utah. You know, I think before discussing this particular public policy, if I may, I'd just like to maybe set the scene here a little bit for the listeners. So,
please. You
know, in the public health world, we're often concerned about what we call the burden of firearm suicide. So in other words, you know, try to think through what's the impact of firearm-related suicide deaths on our communities and our loved ones. And when we think about the burden of firearm-related suicide, we often, you know, think about some sobering statistics. So, for example, suicide is the ninth leading cause of death in Utah, and tragically, it's the second leading cause of death among younger persons in Utah. Nationally, there are typically over 40,000 firearm deaths each year in the United States, and most of those firearm deaths are suicides. They're not homicides. Also, in Utah and in the United States, most people who die by suicide use firearms. So this is an important point. These statistics don't mean that firearm owners are more suicidal. Rather, these statistics and a lot of research show that firearms can complicate suicide prevention when people are experiencing suicidal crises. So enter public policy. There's a lot of public health research that suggests that means matter. And by means, I mean the method of suicide, like using a firearm. So access to firearms, and critically firearms that are not secured or unsafely secured in a home, often matter greatly for preventing death during suicidal crises. So if family members or health professionals can intervene when a suicide attempt is occurring, then there's research that shows that we can save a life and we can prevent suicide from occurring later on. But critically, it's unsafe access to firearms and unsecured firearms that can complicate things. Unlike something like poison, firearms could be highly lethal, the most lethal method of suicide, and upwards of 8 or 9 out of every 10 suicide attempts end with a death. And this is what prevents a potentially life-saving opportunity from a family member or health professional from intervening. So it's often critical in the public health space and the healthcare space to think about creating time and distance between a suicidal person and a firearm. So public policy, you know, those laws, rules, and the actions of government, they can help promote health and well-being in different ways. In 2021, Utah did become one of the first states in the nation to enact what is really an innovative policy, allowing individuals to place themselves on a confidential and voluntary do not sell firearms list. The key word here is voluntary. There are pros and challenges there with this policy being voluntary. So if someone is experiencing suicidal thoughts or suicidal crisis, regardless of mental health or mental ill health, they can voluntarily add themselves to the list and remove themselves from the list. And so there are several challenges with this type of voluntary firearm purchasing restriction policy, challenges to this policy being able to successfully reduce suicide deaths in our communities. And I'd be happy to discuss those more.
Yeah, please do. I am interested, and it sounds like that there's other steps that we can anticipate. So please go ahead.
So you can think about challenges to the successful implementation of any policy. So first, we're already seeing in Utah that this do not sell list policy is not heavily used. And it's a voluntary policy. So to date, public reporting suggests that about 5 or more people in Utah put themselves on the list since the program went live. So how does that stack up with other states? Well, this is an innovative policy and eyes are on Utah, but there are a couple of other states that have enacted similar policies at the state level. So, for example, even in the state of Washington, which has a do not sell list and has had one for a longer time since 2019, only few people have voluntarily added themselves to that list in Washington as well. So from my perspective as a public policy researcher, I think that points to a public policy implementation and a promotion challenge. It's worth noting that even though it's a new type of policy, there has been a study suggesting that people at risk for suicide would add themselves to a voluntary do not sell list like this. So yeah, I think to answer your initial question, I think that indicates that Utah's do not sell list could be one effective tool, potentially, given time, among many other tools in the policy toolbox for helping to reduce firearm suicide-related deaths. You know, at the same time, the study I'm talking about used a survey, and it's worth noting that the same study found that about 50% of survey respondents would feel comfortable putting themselves on a voluntary list, and about 50% of survey respondents said that they would not feel comfortable making that decision to put themselves on the list. So that also...
Evan, I was just going to ask, it seems like sort of an evolutionary step here in public policy is to allow others, health professionals. We're hearing from Representative Ellison that may be the next step. We've got about a minute or so left. Can you tell me if voluntary is one thing, and I think that makes it... It doesn't raise the hackles of sort of the firearms proponents as kind of a gun control measure. If it does, if we do start talking about medical professionals, this starts to look more like a red flag law, which starts to change that debate. Do you see that incremental step that's being contemplated as a political dogfight?
So I caveat is that I'm not a clinician, and certainly this is my view here, not the view of the University of Utah. I know experiences from my own loved ones that being suicidal is emotional and challenging, and it could be really, really difficult in a vulnerable situation. And sometimes people really do need help with making that type of decision of acknowledging that type of a vulnerability during a suicidal crisis and adding themselves to a list like this voluntarily. In Utah, policymakers are thinking about how to make the program more accessible. And I think it's an effective idea to streamline the process and to engage medical professionals to work with individuals to help mm-hmm. complete and submit the necessary paperwork. And we can look to other states like Virginia, which have a similar policy and has thought through innovations like including a mail-in option for this type of enrollment on voluntary do not sell list. And so when we think about feasibility, and I think that's a good question. I get it a lot, and I like to answer it like this. Well, we've seen in so-called red states and so-called blue states that we can enact do not sell list policies, we can enact extreme risk protection order policies, red flag policies, and so on. I think that this these types of incremental steps are feasible. And then that just points to a question of, will that be enough? Is having the policy enough? And do we need to promote it and do more to implement the policy?
Well, Evan, thank you so much for joining us this evening to talk to us about this really interesting piece of legislation that we have here in Utah, but that Congressman Curtis is hoping to find a national stage for. I think it is really interesting, Scott, that it takes 10 minutes between when someone decides to commit suicide and then the actual suicide attempt. And I know that lots of suicide prevention hotlines are based on that kind of fact. And it's good, I think, for our listeners to learn this information so that they're more aware of the resources available to them and their loved ones.
For sure. Straight ahead, Utah is being invaded by vacationers, staycationers, and outdoor enthusiasts. And we're going to be talking about the skyrocketing popularity of short-term rentals here in Utah. Stay with us.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.